Sunday, November 3rd, 2013, and Baruch Hashem, I want to say hello to the wonderful students in front of me and to the many listening across the world, and we have the pleasure of welcoming Rabbi Phillips from London, who is here in person. Now, commenting on contemporary matters, I want to just share a Gemara with you, but share no comment. Gemara Shabbos Daf Kuf Mem Hei Amid Bet, and the Gemara, the Talmidim are asking, "Mipnei Ma Talmidei Chacham Shebevel Mitzuyanim?" And Rashi and all the Rishonim Rem Shat, why do all the Talmidei Chachamim in Babel walk around dressed so beautifully? In other words, everyone wears black clothes, a uniform, whichever way you want to describe it. And the Talmidim answer, "Lefi She'enan Bnei Teira." They don't know how to learn. And the Gemara goes on towards the bottom of the page. Their Rebbe is already talking about it. Not the Talmidim. My Talmidim Chamisha Babav Mutsuyadim Lefi Sheinim B'nei Mekomam. The Anre Yinish B'mata Shamai B'lo Matrat Tubai. That when no one knows you, then you have to wear fancy rabbinical clothes. But where they know you, your Sheyurim paved the way for you. Noted without comment, considering the world in which we live today. Number two. We spoke last week, we were talking about Ein Gozerin Gezeira Bizman Hazeh, and we can't add, and what we have is what we have. And all the Rishonim agree about this. There's no machloket. It may go back to Tkufat Tagonim. Look into the Talmudic Encyclopedia under Gezeira, you'll see. I made clear that a takana we still have. As a matter of fact, I don't know if it was the Chief Rabbi or the Knesset, I believe it's the Knesset last week, enacted a takana that you have to be at least 18 years of age to get married. Until last week, you could be 17 years of age, but now it's 18 and above. Now you all understand, this is a takana. According to Halacha, we have a wedding coming up on Tuesday, Rabbi Phillips' daughter, and I have another wedding from England a week from now, also a Phillips is involved. Is that a relative? She's a TV personality, the mother. It's, I'm a mechotem, I'm a machatonim. Yeah, Melanie.
I know.
But not my wife asked me to ask you, so it's not your family. So there I'm a machatonim, because the Steinhardt's daughter is married to my grandson. So doesn't come from machatonim shaf. So everyone will agree we can't add Gezeirot, even though it's logical. And the pre-Chadash had a big problem with Kitniyot, because Kitniyot breaks every rule in the book. Logically speaking, Kitniyot, where did it begin? How did it begin? Why are we so mocked? This morning a young lady came to see me. I had to give a bracha. It's an old-time student from the Kollel. Baruch Hashem is getting engaged. And she's Parsi, he's Ashkenazi. So they have two big problems. She has a problem that he only holds 3 hours and she's used to holding 6. And her other problem is that he doesn't eat legumes on Pesach. And you saw the Pre-Chadash. And you see, there is one aspect of Judaism and one aspect of Torah, one aspect of Torah living, that somehow Torah, and this is what I spoke about 2 years ago, Minhag Mevatel Halacha. There's something to our lifestyle that develops, I want to call it the Rambam, and what I'm about to say is extremely important. It's very contemporary and very important. And Dafka for Andrew, more important than for anyone else, because he's involved in NCSY. And this is a real problem today. David, Judaism, the Rambam raises the problem, why do we follow the Maskanot of the Gemara? There's so much machloket. Why can't I take an opinion that I like? Why do I have to take the opinion that became the Maskana of the Gemara? And the Rambam says in Mahakdama L'Mishnah Torah, I've lectured on it, spoken about it 1,000 times, Hiskimu Aleihem Kol Yisrael, that We can have machloket, but gradually the Torah people reach a conclusion. And Mori Rebbe, and I heard this from the Rav when I was a lot younger than you, when I was a Talmud of his in the 50s, and I had the schut to speak with him in great detail when I knew a little bit. Remember, when I sat before the Rav, I knew nothing. I still know nothing, but at least I know a little bit more than I knew in the 50s. The Rav always said, if you say you know, it's a bad sign. You have to be a Talmud Chacham. You know the Rav from the Rav. You always have to feel you're a Talmud trying to become a Chacham. You read me, Avi? So in the 70s, 78, already I knew a little bit. My students had sharpened my mind. And I spoke with the Rav in great detail. And the Rav held that this was an ongoing process. And that time and again, we reach a feeling of hiskimu, of crystallization. This is the halacha. This is the halacha. And I can give you a simple example that I saw in my own time. Rabbi Reuben saw it in his time. Maybe Rabbi Phillips can relate to it. Electric lights on the Yontif. I yet saw Chassidic Rebbeim turning on electric lights. So Vic Snows understands my mind. Steve, you remember this? Now, no one in his right mind is going to turn on an electric light today. Even Rav Ovadia, and 100 years ago, the Sfatim were Mekil. Rav Ovadia writes, I think I have him recorded from the 1970s on the radio, where he's telling the children that we understand how electricity works better today, and you know, it says Skirat Ma'agal, it could be Bomna, it could be Makabapatish, it's not Eish. There are other Yisurim involved. But he says, don't rebuke your parents. If they turn on lights, don't fight with them. Let them do as they were raised, but the new generation shouldn't turn on lights. So you see, when it comes to Yiddishkeit, over the hundreds of years, a certain rhythm to Torah life develops. Now, I'll give you an example that's in the headlines right now, and right today I got my face slapped or kissed, depending upon your own hashkafa. I got involved in controversy in America. The truth is, I don't want to get involved in America. I don't really know what's going on. But besides, I was asked by very good people, so I gave a power of attorney to a student of mine who I have absolute confidence in, that if he feels my name should be there, let my name be there. Okay. So I want to ask you a question. Giving women an aliyah, that's an open Gemara at the end of Megillah. Hakol olin. All right, the Gemara says that it's not covered at Sibur. But giving women aliyah, you can make a case 1,000%. What's wrong with giving women an aliyah? Today that Sibur waves, it's covered, where women are equal to men, women go to school, women have education. Why can't we give an aliyah? And you see, to me, that's an example where you cannot quote a Gemara, because 1,500 years later, Torah has progressed a certain way, Hiskimu Aleihem Kol Yisrael, that we keep the sexes totally separate in a house of worship. And then this was universal. You could ask the Rav, you could ask Rav Kook, you could ask the Chazon Ish, you could ask Rav Moshe Feinstein, you could ask the Gever Rebbe. This was universal. Hiskimu Aleihem Kol Yisrael. So that's an example from... When people bombard me with the Gemara, I say, Baruch Hashem, I know Masechet Megillah, I've learned Masechet Megillah many times over. And what does that have to do with Halacha L'maisa in the year 2014? We're living in you know, certain times with certain pressures, and Rabbanim have to walk with Torah. To be a law unto ourselves when there's already a Haskamer and a Hitgabshut and a crystallization.
Women are dominating by themselves.
Yes.
Not men at all.
No, I'm talking about men in a minion with men and women. What you're talking about is something else. My own feeling is, ein chachomim nocham, he said, ein das chachomim nocham. But I wouldn't lose a shteller over it. If the women want to have their own prayer group and want to read from the Torah without making brachot, I don't have a problem with it. Okay? I've said that more than once. The Rav said it. Rav Meisha says it. I can't be any smarter than the Rav and Rav Meisha. But I don't want to break up a synagogue, a feeling of community, of family, etc. Okay. Then I want to show you something else, the other side of the coin. Very fascinating what came up. When we were dealing, before we dealt with the problem of kidney up on Pesach, so we dealt with Rav Avadya Yosef, a very fascinating tshuva on riding a bike to shul on Shabbat. And, you know, the whole question, the Gemara in Beitzer, and something that breaks down, and Klizema, and it's an open Gemara, right? The bike wasn't mentioned by the Gemara, so it's a whole machloket whether what the Gemara says about Klizema applies to a bike or not. Now, you are familiar with Rav Avadya, fascinating, his bekiyut, and his hesitancy, klahatir, and it could be the story I told you from Flatbush may be the key to understanding Rav Avadya. So I want to show you something so fascinating. This week we have in the Kollel, we have Baruch Hashem, outside of myself, we have a wonderful faculty in the Kollel. So among the stars here is my Talmud Rabbi Danny Mann. And Danny Mann, he really is Malei V'Gadosh in contemporary issues. He writes for Torah Tidbits. For years, he didn't identify Danny Mann. It was, you know, was by word of mouth. But so now he identifies it's Danny Mann. He's from Eretz Kamda, from the Kollel. He's a teacher here. He's a product of the Kollel, a product of YU. His wife is my Talmidah. His father-in-law was my, we bummed around together in yeshiva. Zivilus, was a generation gone by. So, and I know Danny Mann's father, his cousin was my gabbai, Zichron Levracha, Jonah Mann in my shul in Maplewood, one of the first real Shomer Shabbos families that came to Maplewood. And so he gets this question from the Maccabees. And you ask the question. And evidently they, you know, the Maccabees got together on a weekday and they sang, what summer did you sing? Deroya Krolaveinim Bat. Ah, it's a beautiful zema. Deroya Krolaveinim Bat. I know, I come from Lithuania. We didn't sing Zmiris. The Reb didn't sing Zmiris. But believe me, Zmiris are beautiful. And I have a Hasidish heart, but a Litvish mind. All right, I'm a Talmud of the Reb. I don't have to apologize. But Deroya Krolaveinim Bat, just think of those words. So, Halavai, the world should know the Pooh Report, the General Assembly. All the talk in the world will not help. The more Shmirat Shabbat, the more Jews, period. Without Shabbat, we go down the drain. Assimilation, Shabbat's the touchstone. If a person makes Kiddush, it shows he believes there's a God. The minute you believe there's a God, you no longer worship yourself. If there's no God, then you're your own authority. You set the ethics, the morals, the standards. You do whatever you want. You worship your God. You worship yourself. Matman says, Nasel Lokim Bidumut Vitsalam Adam. If you say Kiddush, that's the start. The Kotel Friday night, I return to my regular minion. Can I inherit thousands upon thousands of Jews, the Goyim, looking at us, taking movies, pictures. All right, the Friday night, we try to stop them. But before Shabbos, I saw so many pictures, being movies. They said, let them go all over the world and show Jews davening at the Kotel. Kanayim Hara. So the Maccabees got together during the week, and they were each holding Kiddush cups and banging with the Kiddush cups. And the Shaila now comes up. People are going to watch it, and they're going to do the same thing on Shabbat. Are they allowed to? And I have to tell you, the Gemara, you know, the Gemara is quoted. By the way, it appeared in Torah Tidbits. I have it here on in Torah Mussing. Someone sent me a link to it, and Sherry printed it out. But the same thing appeared in Torah Tidbits this week. So I want to tell you the following. According to the Gemara, I asked a wonderful Shaila many years ago, 1950s. What was it? I spent Shavuot at the yeshiva. REITs, whatever you call it. We called it yeshiva, today they call it REITs, whatever you call it. Shiva Shrib Shulchanim. So, Shavuos night, we were dancing and singing at the meal, at the Suda. So I went over to the Mashgiach, Rav Moshe Yaakov HaKohen Lesson, my Rebbe of Musa, Rabbi Rubin's Rebbe of Musa, Rabbi Shimi Yaida Zecher Tzadik Levracha, his Rebbe of Musa, all in the same Chambura. And I said to him, Rebbe, the Vitom and Tansen, Yantiv, how can you dance? And I quoted the Gemara in Beitza. And he gave me I don't know if he realized how profound his answer was. He said to me, Mim getanstin slabatka, und der Alte, und der Lovashmadachai, hab man uns nicht bemerkt. We danced in slabatka, and neither the Alte, that was at Nutten Svi Finkel, or the Lovashmadachai, Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein, told us to stop. And I have to tell you, you see, here, it's just the opposite. That according to the Gemara, we shouldn't be dancing on Shabbos. We shouldn't be clapping on Shabbos. All right, you want to be a tzaddik, you clap this way. But many people clap. We shouldn't be poking around. We shouldn't be banging with kiddush cups on Shabbos. We shouldn't be knocking on the table on Shabbos. According to the Gemara, it's you see? But here, the hitgabshut developed against it. Minig mavatel halacha. Yapti mashum. This is not on a right level, this is the Rabbanan level. But Danny Mann was absolutely right. There's nothing wrong during the week with what you did. It could be in Shabbos, there's nothing wrong. What can we do, Jews dance? But you see, this is the secret of Yiddishkeit. I don't like people who break with the past. We have to be humble. We're part of a people, we're part of a Torah people, we're part of a hitkapshut. This is the way Jews have lived. If someone's going to come along and call you an apikaris for dancing on Shavuos night, he's an idiot. Doesn't want to dance, fine. But he doesn't know basic Yiddishkeit. And lehefech, you're going to come along and call a Gemara, you can give a woman aliyah. This is the way Yiddishkeit developed. But it's much deeper than that. There are a lot of frum Jews out there. Are we an island unto ourselves, or are we part of the greater Torah world? See, with all the machloket, and you know that I'm not one for machloket, and I'm well aware of what went on here, what goes on here, and I'm not a big fan of what happened in the last election, and I'm happy to say if you're following the websites, even in the Haredi world, either people listen to my shiur of last week or 2 weeks ago when I made that statement, they're talking just like Rakefet, Baruch Hashem. I have partners, but we're part of the Torah people. Suddenly we're going to come along and say you can't dance. We're going to come along and say you can call up women. And then once you make that break, look what happened with JTS. Remember, no one had evil intentions. Maybe Mordechai Kaplan. He was already an apikoros. Rob him and denied, and even he, Amalam made a love slip. Remember what I told you? They asked him, Professor Kaplan, if you had these opinions, why did you first express them in 1919? It was the first time he wrote an article against Matan Torah and divine origins. And he said, "Calls mom, my parents were alive, out of Kivit Aviyem, I wouldn't express them." But Finkelstein, Schechter, Ginsburg, mention any name you want, Heschel, I mean, Reb Shaul Liebman, a giant. No one had even intentions. But once you start playing games, look what came out of it. Okay, so I wanted to say, this is exactly the bicycle question. And I couldn't believe it when I saw it. For us, in Yom Diyoma. Now, let me go one step further and end off this series of lectures. 1 second. Let me just get the right pages. Here it is. So, at the end of the class, we raised the issue of answering questions on the telephone. So, I quoted the Mishnah Halacha, and I have in mind to sit down Be'ezrat Hashem, Beli Neder, and go through all the volumes of the Mishnah Lachat and put together a series of shirim. I did it many years ago, but then there were only 7 volumes. Today there are 15. He was a very fascinating personality. The Yungav Rav, the Chavruta of Eli Weissel, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. He did not walk to anyone's beat. And being a Litvak, I love that, you understand? It seduces me, plain and simple. All right, I have a dialectical problem, I have a dialectical tension, my heart is Hasidish, my mind is Litvish, nothing wrong with it. Baruch Hashem, each one has to go their own way. The Rebbe always used to say, the greatness of creation is the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, that no two human beings are alike. Everyone is created by God, and yet each one is a world unto himself. So Menashe Katan comes out against the telephone, and you have to look into a sefer, and you shouldn't paskin bal peh, and Shabbos Mincha, I daven in 4 different shuls, basically. Kabbalah Shabbos at the Kotel, God should give strength. Shabbos mornings, I don't daven at all, basically. I've been davening for 44 years, and all Rifka 6:30, that's how I've gone through Shas. So I'm going a third time now. We start at 6:30. If the chazan isn't finished by 8 o'clock, we shoot the chazan and walk out. You follow Israelis? Israelis that don't play games. This week we finished 10 to 8. It was a pleasure. And I have hours to learn. No one can bother you. No telephone. My wife goes to her shul. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. So, Mincha, Motzai Shabbos, we daven in our parking lot. I come down the steps, and 50 people are waiting, and a block away is another big minion, so Baruch Hashem, and the shuls are packed, so I don't know how damn Jews come out of the woodworks. So, but Shabbos Mincha, my children run a shul. My son-in-law's the president, my grandchildren, the Bal Korei, the Gabbai, etc., etc. So I daven Mincha there. It's a very chashuv crowd they get. It's a weekend shul. So I'm walking home with a man who was not only professor at Hebrew U, but a Supreme Court judge. Professor Yitzchak Englert, if you recognize the name. So he was raised in Switzerland. He's a fine Talmud Chacham, he has smicha. My son-in-law always calls him up Harav. But he was a professor and on the Supreme Court. He was just interviewed, if you saw his picture in the papers, he just came back from Harvard, he gave some lectures there. So we were walking home together, walking my grandson with Professor Englert, with Yitzchak. So he's telling me very fascinating, ties right in with what we're talking about, that when he still remembers as a kid, he was eating a yontif with these Hasidic people, good friends of his grandparents. And you know, this is in Switzerland after World War II, and suddenly in the middle of the meal, this chassidish year, there's the chicken bone, something is broken, and he's chashish, it's treifas, and he turns white. And now they gotta go to the Rav. So they go to the Rav, 20 minute walk, and the Rav is in the Beis Medrash learning, and they show him the chicken bone, and he says, mitonish paskin, you're not allowed to be posek, unless you open the Shulchan Aruch, even though you think you know it all. And they had to open, just what Rav Menashe Katan said, they had to open the Shulchan Aruch, but the story is even funnier. And Yitzchak was a little kid, 11, 12, and he looks into the Machaber, and the Machaber, Taka says, it's treif, and he jumps aloud that it's treif, and the Rav gives him a slap. He says, Schwein! He said, be quiet, don't you say it's straight. And the Ramah Taka says, B'shas HaTachat, Yesh Omrim. Nu, what can be a bigger Shas HaTachat? On Yontif, when you're in the middle of the meal, everything is cooked, and the Rav Paskin V'Hakel. So it's exactly what we were saying, but it's exactly Rav Menashe Katan, that if you have to Paskin Ba'al Peh, and over the telephone, at least take the name and phone number so you can call back. Shailas of Maradam. If the woman tells you it's yellow, it's green, it's not red, it's not black, you have to see it with your own eyes. And I gave you the perush why he said Nashim Daitan Kalat Aleihem Anim Alamed Alav Skot. There are other stories about him, and I can tell you Rakefet is defending him because I know what the man went through, and I was very intimately involved on the next generation with his own family, with a student of mine who was like a daughter to me, who went through exactly the same thing, Hashem thing. So you see, people are people. Halavai, we should learn Musa, Reb Yisrael Salanter should come back to life, and we should be real B'nai Terah. But we have to struggle because Adam Karag Eitzel Atzmo. And because we're egocentric and care about ourselves above anybody else, it can create horrendous problems in life. So I want you to know, Ani Melameid Alav Skot. I know what the man went through, and I have to forgive him for his negative attitude at times towards women. I have a different attitude. To me, nothing greater than women. We of the male species have to be ashamed in the presence of our wives, who are just very, very special. Period. Now, I'm going to show you something that I may be the last person alive who can explain what Rav Henkin is saying. I'm about to go back to one of the greatest Gaonim I had the privilege of knowing, Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Now, Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, those of us that are older, Labriyut, and you have to be at least 70 or more to know about who Rav Henkin was, he was the Posek of America. He was at Tzadik Yisod Olam. He was the head of Ezra's Torah. He took $76 a month, I think it was. When they wanted to give him an increase, he wouldn't take the increase. People in Europe needed more than he does. I mean, it's beyond words, the dedication of Rav Henkin. And he was like, as a grandson here, great-grandchildren, Talmidei Chachamim, Shuvat B'nai Banim, he was like. And Rav Henkin was a very, very special individual, broad-minded. He had been Rav in the Asian parts of Russia. He knew Chabad. He had grown up in Slutsk. He was a Litvak. He had feeling for Chassidus. He was totally broad-minded. So Rav Henkin was the posek. Not that much of Rav Henkin has survived, although I understand now they're putting out his great-grandchildren here, or great-grandson, I'm told they're putting out new volumes now of tshuva that they found, and they've edited them and put in footnotes. But what, in his lifetime, what did exist, put out a few volumes, I can't go into detail. He argued with Rav Moshe, was tremendous machloket between Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe on retroactive annulment of marriage, on Hafkat Kedushin, on a civil, it wasn't so much Hafkat Kedushin, on civil marriage. Does civil marriage need a get or not? And I have to tell you, that machloket, the implications are earth-shaking. Because if civil marriage needs a get, then we have tens of thousands of balei tshuva who are mamzerim al pi halacha. You follow me? Plain and simple. The Russian emigration, the Russian aliyah, in Russia, there was no concept of Kedushin, no concept of holiness. Worse than that, in America, lo aleinu, I apologize for my language, a boy and girl want to live together, they go to a motel, what's the difference? They have liberal parents, Devin. In Russia, there was no space, nowhere. So in order to live together, you got married, you got divorced, You follow me, Yosef Mordechai?
My parents got married with Kedushin.
Not all to say that you come from good stock. We're not there. That's why they were zeicher to have a son like you, Kanayim Hara. But what went on in the, but wait a minute, you're from Kiev, was a little bit from there. Yeah, there was from Ataka. But that's in the Ukraine. But Moscow, what went on in Moscow, what went on in Leningrad, they had nothing from 1917 on, God have mercy. So marriage was not taken seriously. No, along comes a kid, they come in Aliyah, they become B'nai Terah, and the kid finds out he's from his mother's third marriage. And one of the people she was with was Jewish before, lived with him, married to him, no condition, no get, civil marriage, civil divorce. If that is a marriage, then the kid is a mamzer. There was never a get. Transferred to America now. America, irreligious, reform wedding, conservative wedding, no divorce, reform divorce, conservative divorce. Some conservative divorces were good, by the way. Whatever the seminary did with their base did with Rabbi Boaz Cohn was accepted even by the Agudas HaRabbanim. But some divorces were like the reform. And the kid today is learning in Gris Kolel, and he finds out he's from his mother's second marriage with no get in between. Lo aleinu, these problems. So if we would paskin like Rav Henkin, we would have tremendous problems. Halacha l'maisa. He fought with Rav Maisha. You have no idea. I lecture on it for a year, a whole year. There's endless material. I want you to know that in 78, I batted around with the Rav. We bantered on the topic. And the Rav agreed with Rav Henkin. But I got Rebbe to back down about the children. Because the children marrying is only a love. The woman marrying, if she's married, she's an Eish HaDish, it's Chiyuv Mita. Follow? Krita, Chiyuv Mita Beitin, whatever. The children already is only a love. I'm Zeret. Maybe the children, we can be making, that's only itself. The Rav is willing to be the Yavad, to be Samachan Reb Moshe Feinstein, his cousin, and it's a lot more than his cousin. But he agreed, Meikar Hadin, he agreed with Rav Henkin. So this was Rav Henkin. Now, he wrote Sparim on these topics, but his most famous Sefer, which I had the original, I gave it to my son-in-law, of course, I'll explain why, the Ezra's Torah, to raise money, put out a Dutli Yisrael. A Dutli Yisrael was like a 200 plus page volume of contemporary Minhagei Beit Knesset, you follow, and how to act, and Sheilat that were Halacha L'maisa in America, including a Kuntris on the writing of Gittin, the names. I mean, it's very, very important. How do you write in a Josephine? How do you write that in Hebrew? Jerry. How do you write Jerry in a get? I mean, these are interesting problems. John. I did my Talmid, the lady who came to see me this morning, called her fiancé Yonatan. It took me a minute to realize she's talking about my Talmid John. You follow? I know him as John. Who knew him as Yonatan? John. She knows him as Yonatan. Okay? How do you write John? Geraldine. I mean, and Rav Henkin, that was the posek, plain and simple. Now this Edutli Yisrael, very fascinating, because you see the individuality of Rav Henkin in it. Now, a number of years ago, it's already many years ago, I didn't realize, 1981, they put out two volumes, Kitvei Hagon Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Two volumes. And in the reproduction, in volume one of the Edutli Yisrael, on page Kuf Chav Zayin Omer Aleph, in the original edition, but page 167, in the new edition, it's interesting, you have two different paginations, the original and the new. You go to the bottom of the page, and it has a whole addendum here. He'erot l'rabanim u'morei tzedek u'lekihilot. And what does that mean? He's giving advice. He's giving advice to rabanim and manhigim and people who have kilot. And among the advice he gives, for listen to this, I challenge you to explain it. V'lo yafar osim eile aponim b'shelot al yedei telefon u'malimim et shmam u'mekomam b'chdei liftar atzmam milisa ba'ol harabanut. What the heck is he talking about? Not nice what they do. They call the rabbi on the telephone, they don't give a name, they ask a shayla, and simply they don't want to be involved with supporting the rabbinate. What is he saying here? So let me explain to you. It goes back to my lectures on the Agudas Rabbanim, on the Rabbanim in the United States. It goes back to first volume, The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Mori Rebbe. In those days, the 10s, the 20s, the 30s, the Kehillah did not have a Rav. They didn't pay him a salary. A few Orthodox Jews got together, brought a Rav to the city, and the Rav had to make a living out of kashrut. Gifts for Hanukkah, gifts for Purim, Hanukkah geld, Purim geld, Mechirat Chometz. He was Mesarek Kedushin. He gave a hesped. Never. That's the way the Rabbanim had to panhandle to make a living. There was also a concept of Psak geld. When I once had it in Torah, we had it in Torah in my Kehillah, I can't go in Maplewood. So I brought in Rabbi Zuber and Rabbi Zuber, myself, I think Rabbi Kainz as well. We sat together as a beis din, and when it was all over, you know, I'm the Rav of the Kehillah. I didn't expect to get money. Rabbi Kainz didn't expect it. Rabbi Kainz is Rabbi Kainz, but Rabbi Zuber said, Avu has done the psak geld. And some of the guys sitting there were so wealthy, it was just sad. And then they got together a few dollars and gave him a few dollars. Again, these are legendary names, Rabbi Zuber. Their minds, they were two brothers, they were Chabatnikim from birth, and they knew Kol HaTorah Kulu Bal Peh, geniuses. But Rabbi Zuber used to boast that the sixth Rebbe called them the Shegetz. That was his boast. If I'm not telling it exactly right, you get the gist of it. But he used to say to me, the Rebbe made the roof in our shagas, you know. I think he was shaving or something, and the Rebbe got upset with him. And he said, Lenin in Kenstu, Alamdin Bistu, or Ba Shagat Seichen. You know how to learn, you're Alamdin, but you're also a shagas. So, if you see what Rabbi Henkin is saying, is unbelievable. You got a shayla, so go to the Rav, so you give him a quarter. You know, in those days, a quarter was a quarter. Give him a quarter. Bani Shalom, they call him on the telephone anonymously to avoid supporting the Rav. So that's his critique. You understand now, Asher? This is what Rav Henkin is saying. Because you look at this, what the heck is he talking about? The lawyer fell sim, and they're not supporting the Rav? Ah, but he says also, when you ask the Rav face to face, he can look into a sefer. He can decide. And if the Rav changes his mind when he thinks about the shayla, he knows who the man is. He knows how to find him. But when you call on the telephone in a rush, the Rav can make a mistake. And if he wants to change his mind, he doesn't know who called, he doesn't know how to reach him. The Ein Lo Takana. And therefore he says, I admire the Rabbanim who refuse to answer questions over the telephone. But even those Rabbanim who do, the person asking should know he's not acting properly. Go and ask the Rav panim b'panim. And if b'diavad, it might happen that the Rav will answer a shayla over the telephone. Take the name, take the phone number, know how to reach the person. Fascinating. Halacha l'maisa, I can tell you that most shaylos I get, I can answer right over the telephone, because they're all the same. Basically, the shaylos you get are yontif sheni in Israel. This is what comes your way, yontif sheni. Occasionally, I get a shaylah of international dateline where I have my approach, and you know, I've spent a lot of shayurim on it, and I may be right. Which yontif sheni again is one of those questions where the machlekin is so great. You may be right, you may be wrong, but at least Yesh Amila smokes, you can paskin the way you paskin. An article just came out in the new Torah Mada journal. The author told me, he quotes me in the article, I have to look at it in depth and see, but I'm told it's a brilliant article. But whenever I get a shaila that involves personal status, I will always take the name, the phone number, the email. Now it's a modern world, and you don't paskin too quickly. You have to think it out. You have to look into Sparim. Rav Henkin is 1,000,000% right. My dear students, we have arrived. Have arrived at a juncture, and we are shifting sideways. And that Rabbi Philip should be here is min ha-shamayim, because I'm going to quote our correspondence in a few minutes' time. If you recall, we have now finished the Kuntres HaShach on how to paskin. I began it last year at one point. It took us a year probably, but we did justice to the Kuntres. Fine. You recall, we quoted Reb Zvi Pesach Frank. I just spoke with his grandson on Shabbos and told him I'm going to quote your grandfather in Shia this Sunday. Reb Zvi Pesach's grandson is a Ram in a Hesdi Yeshiva. He davens in my children's shul. He's also married to a student of mine from Mechlala. So Reb Zvi Pesach Frank, when it came the question of building an Erev in Manhattan, he said, it's difficult for me at my age to get involved in a Yasha Indo Tchumim, if I'm quoting it properly. And he said, but nevertheless, one thing I can say, that people who claim, how can you build an Erev if Jews will forget, they're not allowed to carry. That we don't have to be concerned with. Halacha is halacha. You do what you do. And we can't start getting concerned. And that's part of the answer, by the way, with the Maccabees, that if you're hitting a phony Kiddush cup, right, those wouldn't real Kiddush cups, those are those they sell today, everything, you're like, God, it's mind-boggling. I saw one lying around. I said, how do you let a silver Kiddush cup? Then I picked it up. I said, oh, wow. I saw an Osharat. It's a sign of, thank God, the economy here. Compared to 69, when I came in Aliyah, I have to make a Shechayinu. Every time I walk in to Osharat or Rami Levi, I saw all the paper goods available, the choice, the fancy. My wife showed me plates that look like that from the Waldorf Astoria, and they're 3 shekel a piece. It's throw it away. So you don't have to worry about side issues. And then this Reb Zvi Pesach Frank put into his letter, remember? And that letter was published in Noam. But now I want to ask a simple question. Why is Erev, building an Erev, such a difficult problem? Why does it engender so much enmity and machloket? When I was in London, I think, what was it, 3 years ago? 3 or 2 years, maybe. And I remember going into what they call Monk Shul, although Rabbi Monk is gone many years, So I saw a sign on the wall that if you tarry on Shabbos, if you're somach on the Erev, you can't be a member of this synagogue. I'm told you can't even get an aliyah. They told me a story that someone came in with a cane and they gave him an aliyah, and after davening the rabbi had them reread the whole Torah. I mean, you know what went on in Flatbush? Tremendous machloket. Machloket that continues until today. I understand. I can't say I saw this with my own eyes, but I'm told that Rabbi Belsky, who's the other posek of the Yoyu, Rabbi Shushechta, and Rabbi what's Rabbi Belsky's first name? Yisrael Belsky, Torah Vadas faculty. That he said if you carry in Flatbush on Shabbos, you machalal Shabbos b'parchesia. That's what I was told that he said. So why is there such machloket? So I want to devote the next half a year, Yisrat Hashem, dealing with this problem, explaining it. And of course, whenever you get involved with Erev, you're involved not with a rabbinic problem, but with a d'oraita problem. Because if it's a reshut harabim d'oraita, then it's very difficult to build a proper Erev. And that's why there's so much machloket. We're dealing here with d'oraita. Chalo Shabbos b'parchesia. On the other hand, I want to show you, despite the machloket, and perhaps it's insoluble, the Lithuanians go one way, the Chassidim go another way, the Mishkanot Yaakov versus the Beit Ephraim. Even if you're machmir, but you'll see so many viewpoints developed that sniff after sniff is built up to support the lenient viewpoint. Sniff. Understand that word? Bahalacha. A new point, a new point, a new shita, a new viewpoint, a new understanding. And if you listen to my shayurim, there is only one conclusion you can reach after it's over, Be'ezrat Hashem. I may carry or not carry, but I'm not going to parcel out the Erev. Doesn't make sense today. So much has happened, and this is what we spoke about. There's a heartbeat to halacha. There's a hitgabshit to halacha. There's a crystallization to halacha. No one in his right mind is going to say that you can't dance on Shavuos night today. Today, to say you can't build an Erev in London, in Paris, in New York, you can be machmir. Don't want to get involved. Get me a suffix, they'll write it perhaps. But there's been such a hitgabshut that you'll see the heter in modern times is probably stronger and better than ever as a result of modern life and what a modern city looks like. Now, Yosef Mordechai, you reading me? You read me. The Chazon, I'm alluding to the Chazon Ish now, but let that stand over. I'm alluding to the Aruch HaShulchan. Yosef Mordechai is at London. He knows. But I'll prove it a different way. You want me to prove I'm right? I'll prove it a different way. And I'm a poor example, because I have to be honest with you. I came in Aliyah, one of the motivating factors. We never saw Israel. We never learned here. What are you talking about? Who had money to learn here, to come here, to see here? So we had two miracles, a major miracle and a minor miracle. The major miracle, the Six-Day War. But the Six-Day War was what? The liberation of the Kotel. Rav Gorin's Ein La Adam Shein Lo Shah, the ultimate moment of his life, your relative. change the world. I'm sitting here because of what happened at the Kotel that Wednesday, and Yosef Mordechai is sitting here, and another 4.5 million Jews are sitting here so far, and many, many more to come, Be'ezrat Hashem. Alright. That was the major miracle. A miracle that still resonates. The minor miracle was open up Washington, and you'll see that a little Rosh Yeshiva salary of $4,200 a year, overnight my salary doubled due to Mr. Joseph Gross. I reproduced the letter from Dr. Belkin to Rakefa, to Rothkopf, because Ephraim is not going to believe what I wrote. Moshe Chaim, he's elastic and you're elastic, okay? Check it out afterwards. Vic, my wife and I took the money. We left our youngest daughter with her parents. Zichronim Levracha, it's my father-in-law, is your son tonight. We went to visit Israel with the two older girls. No, we went to visit Israel. I have to be honest with you that we vowed in August of 68 that within a year we come back la'alot atzah b'rina. And it wasn't nefesh b'nefesh. Don't confuse your aliyah with my aliyah. Please. God, guys, have you? No, yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Or it's a sick. They knew it was so easy with your cousins all the time.
Baruch Hashem. And I have to be honest with you, we came back July, we docked July 5th, the boat came in July 5th, 1969. And we got off the boat thinking we'd never see America again. And today I'm involved in controversy in America. I sit here and I give a student power of attorney and I wind up getting told in Gris Kollel that I'm a member of Degel HaTorah. Am I complimented or embarrassed? Both. So we visited Israel. We never saw a Nerev in America. What did I know about it? I knew a little bit. I knew 2 cents worth. I saw all the Jews in Jerusalem carry on Shabbos. I remember seeing Hasidim carrying a bed on Shabbos. You follow me? I said to Malka, we gotta be crazy to live in America. You can't carry, you go out of your mind. I came in Aliyah, wow, an Erev. Wherever you go in Israel, an Erev. Alright, then I started to learn a little, but it was one of the motivating factors. But how do I know I'm right in my approach? How do I know I'm right? Because I was zeichet to have a great Rebbe. And I don't know if I write about it in the Rod. I certainly mentioned it in class. Moria Rebbe, you always used to say, and I quote, word by word, I don't carry on Shabbos. He's a Litva, I can't carry on the Litvish. But in Haslavich, every Thursday, I check the Erev for my father, and I got 2 kopecks. Okay? Chaim, get the message? That's exactly the message I hope you will walk out of here with. But give me a number of months to fill it in. And finally, a good joke that Yitzchak Englert, Professor Englert, the Supreme Court Justice Englert, told me on Shabbos. He told it to me in the past too, but I didn't remember all the details, so he filled me in again. So he told me the following joke. We talk Hebrew Yiddish to each other. He knows English too, obviously. But alright, I'm living it in Yiddish, I'll try to say it in English. 2 guys are learning together. Chavruta, Geschmack. And at the end of 2 years, one of them says to the other one, oh, he says, I'm making Sheva Brachas, my son is getting married, come, you'll be a Panim Chadashat, part of the minyan. So the other guy says, oh, I want to tell you, I'm not Jewish. What do you mean you're not Jewish? You're learning Gemara. He says, I love Gemara, I love Talmud, I love the way of thinking. He says, but you observe Kashrut. He says, Of course I observe. I live here in an area. Everyone is kosher. I want people to eat my house. You observe Shabbos. He calls them the Gemara in Sanhedrin. You know the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Goyish Shamar Shabbat Hayat Mitah. He says, no, no, no. He says, I carry on Shabbos. I carry. I go out of my way to carry a key and tissues. So the man, what's the big deal? There's an Erev. I don't accept the Erev. And that's exactly what we're up against. Now, I want to say something else that's very important to give you two sources that I will come back and quote from and utilize. Erev is a very complicated topic. Whenever you get involved in a complicated topic, a Rebbe can confuse you or attempt to be crystal clear. And I'll give you a simple example. When I went into the rabbinate, I suddenly have to sell chametz to a guy, 1961. So there was a great rav in Philadelphia, there were a number of rabbanim who call it Torah Kulu Baal Peh, that as much chashba as you have on a dead leaf. You know, Philadelphia was sold out to the conservative movement, but I went to Rav Yalas, Rav Ephraim Yalas. Rav Ephraim Yalas, if you want to know, he was Rav Simcha Meir Feldman's father-in-law. But if you want to know who Rav Yalas was, he used to sit, and I would be at a Chabrenyan at the Rebbe. He was one of those who sat up front. Now the Rebbe would be quoting Tosfot by heart. The Rebbe knew Kshas and everything by heart, and what a mind. He would be sitting up front quoting one line ahead of the Rebbe by heart to show you that he knew every Tosfos and Kshas Baal Peh. So I went to Rav Yalas, Rebbe, learning me, Rav Yalas, he was a Galician, he was a big London. Teach me, what is this Mechirat Chametz all about? What is the Shtar all about? He started getting involved in Pilpulim and Shitat and Achronim and throwing around knowledge. I walked out of there more confused than a hamburger that comes from five different sources of meat. So I went back to YU, made an appointment with my Rebbe, Rebbe Yosef Weiss, should live and be well, my only Rebbe who's still alive, Larifa Jemim, told him, and Rav Weiss taught me what I want very clearly what a Shtar Mechirat Chametz is all about. And until today, Baruch Hashem, I don't sell Chametz, but all the years I sold Chametz, I did Kinyanim and I knew what I was doing and I was clear because Rav Weiss made it clear to me. Rav Vialis, Pilpul, but Halacha L'maisa Havich Nishvastanin Ein Vort. Now I want to mention there are two wonderful books that have come out in contemporary times that deal with the topic. And these two volumes are fabulous, crystal clear. One of them is in Hebrew, and this came out in, I think, in the 70s already, and I knew the author, Harab Sh. Elimelech Langa, Lamid Nun Gimel Hei, Hilchot Eruvin. It's a fabulous volume in Hebrew. He was, if I'm not mistaken, a Hezder boy, a Keren B'Yavne graduate, and I remember everyone was hoping he would go into Chinuch. He was a London Mufak, became a lawyer, went into law. I've lost track of him. If anyone knows where he's at today, I'd be happy to hear. The other volume is by an author from a very prominent Yeki family. It's in English, Rabbi Yosef Gabriel Berchafa. The volume is called The Contemporary Erev, Eruvim, in Modern Metropolitan Areas. Published by Feldheim, I have the first edition, I believe, 1998. If I'm not mistaken, there have been subsequent editions as well. Now, what is the heart of the problem? tell you exactly what the heart of the problem is. All of you know there are four Rishiyot B'Shabbat. There's Rishus HaYocha, there's Makom Ptur, there's a Carmelit. Carmelit Chazal gave the status of the Rishut HaRabim, but there's a Rishut HaRabim. If something is Rishut, what is the concept of an Erev? In a Rishut HaYocha, you're allowed to carry. The concept of an Erev is to close the place in and give you a feeling you're in a Rishut HaYachid. And all of you know, to build a little basic Erev, you take two poles, you stretch a wire on top. Could be in big cities, we can use telephone wires, electric wires. A lot was written. The trains, the L's, forming a concept of a Tzurat HaPetach, as it is called halachically, and it's 100 plus years ago in New York. In other words, it creates a feeling of you are enclosed. It's a Rishut HaYachid. It's one property. It's no different than a Rishut HaYachid. You have set it up with an Erev. This is the concept of an Erev. Tzurat HaPetach. A feeling. It gives you a feeling. Enclosure. A fence. A door. Lavud. Call it what you wish. However, if something is a Rishut HaRabim D'Oraita, the only way you can enclose it is by a real fence or doors that close. I repeat, if an area is a Rishut HaRabim D'Oraita, you cannot use a legal fiction. You cannot use a Tzurat HaPetach. You need real doors. You need a real wall. You need a real fence. Well, if a place is a Rishut HaRabim D'Oraita, where in the world do you have a city in modern times that is totally fenced in, that has a real wall, that has doors that you close at night and seal off the city? Where do you have it? Could be the old city in Jerusalem, the Pir Tzad. Make it Surat HaPesach over the Pir Tzad. Could be there. You have an example of a good Erev if that's a Rishut HaRabim D'Oraita. See the problem? Again, I don't want to confuse anyone. Just put down a separate, a simple concept. Generally speaking, when we build an Erev, you talk in terms of a legal fiction. You all know in the country, put up poles, wires, look at the Erev in Yerushalayim. Look at the Erev in Israel. Wherever you travel, you'll see a Erev. You'll see flags on the wires. Planes, helicopters, I don't know what, trucks, shouldn't knock them over. Jerusalem has a whole squad of Eidei Haredit people with special cars, with ladders that once a week check the whole Erev, get a lot more than two kopecks for it. They're employed full time. And they rebuild, they structure. When they built the Erev in London, who did they call in, if not the people from Jerusalem? I have pictures of them. I'll show it to you at a certain point. If we're to judge how I began to share with your dress and your big beard and your long payas, they are tzaddikei yisod olam. And that's an Erev. But if the Rishut HaRabim, which is the real problem where you cannot carry the Oraita, Rishut HaRabim, then you need a wall. You need a fence. You need doors that close at night. Where do we have it? I don't know. Now, how do you define Rishut HaRabim? And let us see. Let us begin. Let us begin. I'll read it. I'll give you the Hebrew sources, but I'll read it in Hebrew. But let me begin in English. Let me make it crystal clear. The most stringent definition of Rishut HaRabim. I'm reading from Beth Hafer's work. But those of you who read Rabbinic Hebrew well, I also highly recommend Langer. It's two beautiful volumes. Clear. Most stringent definition, and the one that's most loyal to the Rabbinic text, meaning the Gemara in Eruvim, Daf Vav Amud Aleph, is the Rambam. And what does the Rambam say? Hilchot Shabbos, Yud Dalid, Halacha Aleph. Which domains are characterized as Rishut HaRabim? Deserts, forests, marketplaces, and any road that opens into them. If the road is 16 amot wide and is not roofed over, not covered. 16 amot wide. Gentlemen, any road. And what do you measure? I was just throwing my grandson. We were playing around Shabbos, walking home from Mincha after we left off Professor Englert. What do you measure? The sidewalks, the gutter, the sidewalk. Sidewalk, gutter, sidewalk. Well, how wide is 16 amot? All right. Machloket HaPoskim. We were raised an amah is 18 inches. That's Rab Chaim Na'az Shita. 18 inches. You can see it on page 6 in the contemporary Eruv. Well, if it's 18 inches, 16 amot times 18 gives you 288 inches, 24 feet. Chazon Ish is more machmir, or more mekild actually. How long is an amma? According to the Chazon Ish, it's 2 feet. From here to here, 2 feet. 2 feet, 24 inches, times 16, you wind up not with 24 feet, but 32 feet. Alright? Chazon Ish would be more makil. But whether it's 24 or 32, look at Jerusalem. How many streets do you have that are certainly more than 32 feet wide? Overwhelming majority of the streets. Look at London. Not all the streets are that wide. If you take the Chazal Ish's viewpoint, I saw in Gold is Green, I couldn't believe it, in a city, modern London, center of the financial world, etc. If a car is coming down, you can't drive. Two-way streets, you gotta wait till the car goes through, then you can drive. Could be there. There's not 32, but there's certainly plenty of streets that are 32 feet wide. Take Reb Chaim Na'ah, which is basically the way we paskin, all you need are 24 feet to have a Rishut HaRabim Diorata. Look at New York. Look at Paris. Look at Moscow. Leningrad. Any city. Cars have to get through. Buses have to get through. I am told, and you can check it out, I don't know if it's right or wrong, that there is one development in Israel where they were makpid not to make the streets more than 16 amot wide. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Bethel. Has anyone been to Bethel?
Yeah.
Is it true? Have you measured? Have you looked? Has attention been called to it? I'm told in Bethel, there they were makpid when they planned it. It was built when I did basic training in Basis Hadracha Abba, Bad Abba in Bethel. It was a deserted Jordanian army base. There was not one Jew living in Bethel yet. Who would dream that the Jordanian army base would disappear and a tremendous yeshiv would rise? There, I'm told, they went out of their way. Nothing should be more than 16 amot wide. Purposely, so they should have no problem building an Erev. But anywhere else in the world, if the Rambam is right, and the simple pshat in the Gemara would seem to indicate that this is a Rishut HaRavim, then we have a tremendous problem. Every city, every moshav, every place you have sidewalks in modern times, every place you have cars, I still remember how they widened Rehov Hamach, how they widened Rehov Baza. My time, in the 45 years I'm living here, every major place in the world, maybe not a farm, maybe we just have an entrance for a few cars to park, you have a Rishut HaRabim the Oraita with all that that implies. How do you build an Erev? How do you build a fence? How do you build a choma, a wall? How do you put up doors that you can close at night, that you can fence in? According to the Rambam, there's no Erev outside of a small little moshav. No way. And taking the Rambam word by word, this is the Lithuanian approach, basically. This is why Achronim in Lithuania were machmir. This is why they couldn't agree on an Erev in a big city. This is the Mishkanot Yaakov. This you'll see in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Mechaber. I'll show you something blow your mind next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, the Bir Halacha. And what I discovered, Shmiat Shabbat Kechulchata, if you take this approach, we are caught in a Dioraita problem. Carrying is forbidden in Rishut HaRambam. How do you build an Erev? The Rambam, no Eitzah. 16 Amot, finished. No can do, unless you can totally fence in the city. Yerushalayim, we'll talk about it. There's sources. It's fenced in by doors that closed at night. Okay. This is the Rambam. Everyone knows this Rambam. Rashi on the Gemara in a Rivim Tafava Mid Aleph. Rashi comments on the Gemara, and Rashi throws in an addendum that becomes the heart of the whole halachic history debate dialogue until today. I quote Rashi in English from contemporary Erev. 16 amas broad. And Rashi adds, and a city in which there are 600,000 people that has no wall, or whose main gate thoroughfare runs straight, mufulash, from gate to gate, that is thus open, just as the expanse was open before the traveling camp and the travels in the tribe in the desert. This is a Rishut HaRabim. So Rashi adds on more requirements. 16 amot, fine. It's not enough. You need 600,000 people in the city, like the Jews in the desert. What do you mean 600,000? What does that mean? Out in the city, walking in the city, going through the city daily. Who do you count? Jews? What about Gentiles? What about cars? People are in cars. Do you count them? Do they count? Ocean Parkway, Queens Boulevard, FDR Drive. Hundreds of thousands go by every day. But the cars are a Rishut HaYachid. Can you count them? Do they fall into the 600,000? And what do you mean 600,000? There were really 2 million. 600,000 men, wives, children. Alright, but the Torah says 600,000. See the problem? Queens Boulevard. I told you. How many of you are from Queens? 12 lanes. Queens Boulevard. 12 lanes. 3, 3, 3, 3. I told you, when Derry was accused of killing his mother-in-law, so-called mother-in-law, as I remember what I told you, I walked into the Kollel Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, was in a part of the building that doesn't exist anymore, and the students said, you know, nice, naive young men like you caught up in Israeli politics, that's the antithesis of Torah. And they said, Rebbe, could Derry kill his mother-in-law? Is it possible a guy with a beard, a frum guy? I said, absolutely. It's a politician. But he didn't do it. Rebbe, you just said he could do it. What do you mean he didn't do it? The papers say he may have done it. I said, gentlemen, a politician is capable of anything. It doesn't matter whether he has a beard or a kippah or anything else. Sadden the arachachu. Don't have to illustrate it. Politicians. But even Derry couldn't arrange for that Nebuch, who was a Jew from Russia, who was driving the cab or the car that killed her, to be in that spot at that moment in a 12-lane highway when she's crossing the street. Derry could not do that. No human being could do that. Boy, the fellas were laughing and crying. Yefta Kleiser Rebbe, you are... I don't want to use their word, but they said to me, I'm not a genius, but I've lived in Israel too long to be fooled by the headlines. But who do you count? Why do you count? Then, it's another requirement. You need a main thoroughfare that goes through the city unobstructed. One end to the other. Like in the desert. Who obstructed the Jews in the desert? What was built there? What stood there?
Wow. Broad Street.
Excuse me?
Broad Street.
The broad open space. Relax, sorry. Savlanus. Okay. So wait one second. So you'll say to me, well, look at Ocean Parkway. Yeah, Ocean Parkway. Look at Ocean Parkway. Aren't there traffic lights along the way? Look, the minute there are traffic lights. Excuse me? And what about curves. Think of Ocean Parkway. No, no, even Queens Boulevard is not straight. Far from it. Remember, these highways were built after there were buildings, after there were blocks. All right? You start to see what I'm driving at. In other words, we're only scratching the surface. But one thing becomes clear. If Rashi is correct, it becomes a million times harder to find a Reshut HaRabim throughout our history. Not only throughout our history, but as I will explain and show and cite, in the year 2014, it is practically impossible to find a Reshut HaRabim Dioraita. The only Reshut HaRabim that I can think of, and even there you may be able to shoot me down with the Chazon Ish, is Red Square, the Kremlin Square in Moscow, where under the communists, millions of people would gather to cheer the great leaders of the communist revolution, brotherhood of man, solidarity of the workers. Have you been to Red Square? And remember, there is a wall there, but most of it is open. The wall is only the northern part. Every place else, but there are buildings surrounding today. There's gum, there's shopping, there are tourist attractions, their churches allowed to reopen. This may present more kulot and more kulot, but Rakefet was the happiest guy in the world to do with Katsatska in Red Square and to shout Shema Yisrael at the top of his lungs. Today, Mordechai, you don't have to do that. You can go into any shul in Moscow, you can daven, and if you need Putin for a minion, just remember he's not Samach on the Erev. Pshuto kamashma'o. But you start to see what I'm saying? So, Rashi, unbelievable. Where'd he get it? Wow, we're going to start next week's class. It's a real problem. How'd he come in with 600,000 people? What's his source? The Gemara doesn't say it. No text in the Gemara says it. The Rambam gives you an honest replay of the Gemara. Didn't add a syllable. Rashi builds a whole new concept. And finally, in advance of next week, we live in a wonderful world today. People are not only studying in yeshivat, you can go on for advanced degrees. There's no end what you can do in rabbinic literature today. And I'll give you a simple example. A musmach of the yeshiva, I believe, late 70s, early 80s, Rabbi Adam Mintz. Recognize the name? Okay. Talmud Chacham was in the big rabbinate. Today he's teaching more than the rabbinate. Well, you go into the world, everyone needs a title. In my days in the rabbinate, I found that balabatim swallow rabbis, but they don't eat doctors up so quickly. So I decided to get a doctorate. Now, I was interested in Jewish history. That's what attracted me. And the truth was that in those days, Bernard Rebel, I don't know today, was not doing really great work in Talmudica or Talmudics. Today you have Bar Ilan, today you have Hebrew U. Today you can really do beautiful doctorates, Gaonic literature, Talmudic literature. in the United States of America, you have not only Bernard Revel, you have their rival, NYU. And NYU has a lot of fine, capable people doing doctorates. Who do you think just finished a doctorate on Erev in the in North America, I should say? Rabbi Dr. Adam Mintz. The book has not yet come out, but I have to thank Rabbi Mintz, who's married to my student Sharon Lieberman. Sharon, the daughter of among my closest friends, Barry and Sue Lieberman, and he made available his doctorate to me. So I'm going to be able to quote not only from the classic sources, but from Rabbi Mintz, Dr. Mintz as well. How many of you know Rabbi Mintz? Or am I throwing your name out that's new to you? I see you're all looking at me blank. A few of you, Rabbi Moshe knows, good. Okay, Andrew, you know what I'm talking about? Okay. My dear students, to reiterate, what have we done so far today? All right, we dealt with the Maccabees. So a lot of hashkafah involved. It's not a simple matter. Not a simple matter that you take one open Gemara and you're more machmir today. I hold that anyone who will give a woman an aliyah at a regular minyan, I hold that to be conservative Judaism, and I sign on it. And I'm not ashamed if that makes me a Degel HaTorah person. Fine, I'm Degel HaTorah. I'm so distant from Degel HaTorah like I am from the moon. But all right, let the acronym fit. In other words, you take another Gemara, an open Gemara. We can't dance, we can't sing, we can't clap hands, Ribbono Shel. And we sing, we dance, we clap hands. So you see that on the Rabbanim issues, Klal Yisrael has a tremendous power. Minha Koveya Halacha. Can't go back and redo all my Shayurim, but it's all on the magic website. Gentlemen, don't answer over the telephone. If you have to, take a name and a phone number. I explained to you those words in Rav Henkin. Sishtet Rabbanim. It harms their panasa. That's what the meaning is. Thank God, no one will understand that 10, 15 years from now. The world has changed and a Rav today can live in dignity. We quoted Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank and we can get involved in Erev. And I simply explained why Erev is such a terrible machloket. Because if the Rambam's definition is right, there's almost no place in the world you can build an Erev. But Rashi throws in concepts. Where did he get them? What do they mean? And that's what we will build upon. But the ultimate approach has to be a very simple approach. I may be machmir, but don't throw stones at anybody else. Chas v'chalila. My Rebbe got 2 pokets a week for checking the Erev. Now, tomorrow, a very fascinating shiur on the development of other yeshivas in America. And you'll see something, Hashkacha Prat, involving New Haven, Cleveland, Baltimore, the names that will come out. I'll show you an amazing document from Rav Moshe Feinstein. But that's tomorrow. Next week, B'ezrat Hashem on Sunday, we pick up with Rabbi Mintz, Dr. Mintz, exactly where we left off. Where did Rashi get it? And next Monday, am I correct? There is no class. Rakefet slaughtered by the General Assembly. And for those of you who are going to the GA, one mantra. The more Shmirat Shabbat, the more Jews in the world. If anyone wants a copy of Dr. Lawrence Shaw's words on sturgeon and on the fish, here it is. It adds to the Mekilim. This is for Rabbi Rubin, and something very fascinating Rabbi Rubin sent me, that a Christian, a Jesuit, wrote a doctorate on Rav Soloveitchik's philosophy. And with this, I can tell you a story, very fascinating. This is the introduction to the doctorate, and tell you a fascinating story. I was walking to the Kotel, it has to be the mid-70s, Friday night, and I meet a student. This student had studied with me in BMT, he was now in Bar Ilan. So his Bar Ilan professors have to show them they can knife. What does Rabbi Kefik boast about Rabbi Soloveitchik? Who is Rabbi Soloveitchik? They study his Ish Halacha in Catholic Jesuit institutions. This is what the professor tells him. So the kid tells me this on the way to the Kotel. I said, you go back and tell your professor they also study the Old Testament in these Catholic institutions. The kid came to me next week and he said his Rebbe, his professor apologized. Finally, this is an unbelievable picture. This is Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich with Rabbi Baruch Berlebovich and with Rabbi Chenich Agus, the Macheshet from Vilna, member of the Vilna Beis Din. Look at Rabbi Yeruchim, the young, wild Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich. If you didn't know him, you can't appreciate it. But if you knew him, one picture worth a million words. My dear students, and a big mazel tov to Rabbi Phillips, until we meet again in health and happiness, 9:15 tomorrow morning. It's Rosh Chodesh. If you don't have time to eat, bring breakfast to class. The main thing is, be here. Das v'danya.